shout out to every young brother, you know, just doing his bid right now. Keep your head up. Just walking that yard, wish he had wings to just, you know, fly up out of that joint. Man.
Hi, this is John Amundsen. I want to welcome you to the next podcast in a series of podcasts presented for you by the Psychologist Association of Alberta. The purpose of the podcast is to present information that's timely, topical, and even controversial to the membership. I let in with Nelly this song about doing time being in prison, because today I want to talk about the Stanford Prison Experiment, SPE. And I want to talk about two articles that were in the American Psychologist, volume 74, number 7, 2019. So hot off the press, a discussion of the Stanford Prison Experiment. Nellie's singing about the 3 feet wall that's between the prisoner and the outside world, and it's the only song I could find about maybe doing. I guess there's some other ones I could have found about doing time, but I thought that was a really good one. I really like that song. Let me take the first article, and it's entitled "Debunking the Stanford Prison Experiment." It's by a guy named Lechexier, and he is the foundation for the second article I want to talk about, which is by Haslam, Riker, and Van Babel, and it's called "Rethinking the Nature of Cruelty: The Role of Identity Leadership in the Stanford Prison Experiment." So the first one really takes Zimbardo to task and says, this experiment that has been a cornerstone of social psychology for years, and one of the most famous experiments in the world, is not right. I've done a podcast already on this idea of replicability in psychological research, and one of my favorite journals, the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, get a lot of articles out of that. They could only reproduce, I think, a third of the articles that have been published in that, or maybe two-thirds, and one-third they couldn't. Go back to the podcast, because I did talk about this. So replicability is an issue always in psychology, but it's become a really explosive issue given that particular research on a personality and social psychology. But now they've taken on the Stanford Prison Experiment. So let me just go over some of the things that Lechexier has pointed out. First, he raises concerns about Zimbardo's description of how he came upon the idea of doing such an experiment. First, are you guys, you're all familiar with the Stanford Prison Experiment? I'll describe it. 1971, 24 young men were recruited to participate in an experiment. It was to go for an extended period of time, but after 6 days, it was terminated. In the experiment, they'd assigned half of the folks, 12 to be guards and 12 to be prisoners, put them in a situation and then gathered data observationally on the role induction that arose as a result of being either a prisoner and or a guard, reported the data. And the outcome, you know, was amazing. Zimbardo claims he got sick, he had headaches, he couldn't sleep, because as the experiment went on, he got more and more tense. He served in the role of the kind of warden and worked more with the guards, of course, in setting up the experiment. And the outcome of the experiment, as reported by Zimbardo, was that the guards became increasingly oppressive, the prisoners increasingly resistant and passive resistant, and that good, decent people, the 12 young men who were the guards, became increasingly determinant and vicious. And the argument was that role calls out the behaviors in individuals, regardless of their more primary or principal ethics or values. In other words, in social psychology, it is context that will drive behavior. So that was the contribution of his experiment, and it's been held that thus and such for many years. All right, so we're going to take the work of, I've already said his name a couple of times, Trexler, and talk about why he says it's bunk. First, he questions a little bit of Zimbardo's ethical honesty about how he arrived at doing the experiment. Zimbardo says, I was thinking about this, blah, blah, blah. But apparently, prior to the initiation of the experiment, in his social psychology class, he'd ask students to do presentations on things like street culture of drug addicts, old age homes and the impact on the residents, and the effects of prisons on prisoners. And a group of his students, apparently living in Tonan Hall, set up their own experiment and did a little thing much like Zimbardo's experiment and presented that to the class. And they said, Zimbardo just sat up and really listened to what these young undergraduate students had done, and he got very excited about this, but he never mentioned this experiment, never mentioned it as sponsoring his interest. So there's an expropriation of the work of others toward his own ends and his own aggrandizement. So he didn't like that. Second, all right, he says the guards knew what results the experiment was trying to follow. That Zimbardo talked to the guards as if they were co-experimenters with him. They were his cohorts, not the subjects. They were told that the subjects are the prisoners, and their job was to find out how the prisoners reacted to them guarding them, and that they believe that they spent 4 or 6 hours orienting the guards toward this, and far from then reacting spontaneously in a pathogenic social environment, the guards were given clear instructions. They were told to create vexation, to create boredom, to create confrontation, and those are the variables that existed around the prisoners, so that the prisoners could respond in a way that I'm sure Zimbardo, you know, authentically felt would be the way they would react to a prison environment. There were a lot of instructions that were given then by the experimenters to the guards. He has a whole bunch of quotes from the data, what this guy did, Latrex here. He went into the data and analyzed it and looked at it, and he looked at the meetings that they had, and again, it was to be boredom, humiliation, and vexation were the directions given to the guards. It wasn't just, you be guards, I'll be prisoner, let's watch what happens. So he believes that that compounds the results that Zimbardo proposes. They also intervened at times to give precise instructions or to recall the purposes of the experiment to the guards. There were guards who were like, kind of playing around the edge a little bit, like, you know, getting closer to the prisoners, and they wanted to have them continue to behave like guards. Now, there's an implicit bias in how they were to behave, and they were to behave like guards who were seeking, as I already said twice, to promote boredom, humiliation, and vexation. Again, I've already said he wanted them to also see they were his research assistants, not subjects of it. The prisoners as well were told, everybody was told they could leave at any time. But in fact, when they wanted to leave, they were going to have to get medically screened or you know, blah, 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 blah. So there were hurdles to the prisoners being able to say, we're not doing this anymore. The same with the guards, because a couple of the guards were saying, well, I'm not tough enough to do this. And then they were coached a little bit by the warden, by the experimenter who was Zimbardo. Also, they say that the he claims, Zimbardo says over and over, the experiment became a reality. People were lost. They gave up their reality. They had suddenly created a whole new reality, et cetera, et cetera. And the critic of this says, the participants never lost touch with reality and were conscious of participating in the experiment. They were continually reminded of this in a variety of ways. And in interviews afterwards with the subjects, other psychologists have said, they always knew it was an experiment, and they didn't, the loss of touch with reality that Zimbardo felt was happening really wasn't there. This was never reported. It was never reported, you know, that clearly it wasn't as... what was reported was Zimbardo wanted to advance his proposition that role could submerge everything, including the reality around the individuals. The final criticism that he brings, which is the worst, is he says, archival material revealed in the deed, the SPE, the Stanford Prison Experiment data, are neither complete nor uniform. He said there's so many hours of this, so many hours of that. There's no record of all of this, and that the material that Zimbardo produced, he feels, was so incredibly biased toward dramatizing situations, it appeared as a much more powerful experience than it probably actually was. Also, he knows that Zimbardo, on the good side, you know, to the good, Zimbardo had concerns about prisons and the way they were managed. And he'd already spoken of this, and he published and talked about this, even on the last day of the experiment. He was already talking about how bad prison conditions are and how the conditions in the prison is going to bring out the worst in the guards. Now, so what can we learn from the SPE? Well, that's the second article, because what they look at is this. They say there are two things that can drive behavior. The first is the contextual, which Zimbardo argues for, meaning the circumstance calls out of the individual's behaviors that might not actually be inherent in the repertoire of an individual. The lynch mob mentality, right? Why good people do bad things. However, there are some problems, and I'll talk about the problems these other experimenters say existed with this context and role responsiveness theory. The first is, and I'm repeating what I already said about the Trexier's article. They didn't always conform entirely. Zimbardo picked out salient qualitative experiences to dramatize his experiment, but they were not as role-conforming as one would be led to believe, and role-seduced and submissive. The other is the action of the experimenters, again, he said this, Latrexier, primed and provided a leadership, and that's their argument about identity leadership and what they call referent informational influence that was really the salient learning from the experiment. And they talked about three things that effective leaders need to understand to be able to influence others. They must be prototypical of the group. They must make potential followers represent themselves as members of a common social group and then represent their proposals as the actualization of the group understanding. You see, there's always the group identity and individual identity. I am a man, but I am also a psychologist. That's a group. I am a man. I am also, I'm making this up, a Presbyterian. So you amplify the psychology Presbyterian. I'm not a Presbyterian. I said to make something up. But you amplify that a lot and then have people step into that. And the leaders are the ones that can, they I'm representative of that group. And I'm a prototype, and you look at me, and this is how you need to be. And then they need to be seen as advancing those interests. So what they feel about the SPE, the Stanford Prison Experiment, is that the guards had a much greater adherence to the warden, to the experimenter. We are associates of Zimbardo's. We are his assistants. We're not the subjects of it. So they were buying in. He was prototypical then of the way they were to behave, and the instructions that came out did evidence that they shaped the guards' understandings of the way they would structure the regime each day. Okay, and then any kind of rebellion to that, as I mentioned, Latrexier says they would hesitate, put extra demands on them so that they wouldn't step out of the experiment. I want to go over, there's a couple things. I'll just read a summary. To summarize, the evidence from the Stanford Prison Experiment sustains three theoretical claims. First, the traditional notions that the guards became cruel of their own accord is very hard, if not impossible, to believe and sustain. Second, the experimenter's leadership was a central feature of this study. Third, and more specifically, we see the experimenters engaged in identity leadership and in effective ways to encourage guards' cruelty. And those were those three things that I said. The first, group identity. I am prototypical of that. I will set how you're to be a member of this group, and then reward accordingly for the participation in the proper way. So we suddenly have this huge conundrum, right? Cruelty and the behaviors of the guards didn't just come from the nature of the circumstance. And it puts us back in the soup where we say behavior does not inhere simply in the nature of the individual, in other words, the cruelty that's inherent in the individual, neither does it exist in the demands of the situation. As a postscript, and something I shared in another podcast, I've heard Zimbardo speak. I shook his hand, met him, but when I heard him speak, he talked about when he ended the experiment. And he said the experiment was just moving along, and he was excited, and, oh, my God, this is going to talk about context and driving behaviors. But he said, he says, a graduate student I was dating at the time and was an object of great affection for me said to me, oh, my God, I don't know if I want to be with a man like you who is celebrating the things that are going on. So he said the graduate student he was dating helped him qualify his experiment and quit. But he said this in a public forum. This is like within the last 4 or 5 years. He announces, yeah, I dated my graduate students. Anyway, that's just a little something on Zimbardo and his maybe out of touchness. I was trying to find some more on prison. I didn't want to play Nelly again, so I thought, what's the closest thing I got? Oh, I know. Sting and the Police. Get it? Okay. All right, so keep tuning in. We'll keep cranking them out.